It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, everyone. I'm Judge Jeanine Pirro, along with Jessica Tarlov, Lawrence Jones, Katie Pavlich, and Greg Gutfeld. It's 5 o'clock in New York City, and this is The Five.
So I'm not, I have absolutely no intention of the Democrats not winning the House in November. I think that in terms of the work that this president has done, and he's been a great president. I don't know about polls, but I do know about winning the races one district at a time.
An utterly delusional Nancy Pelosi says everything is awesome in Joe Biden's America and that Democrats deserve to be rewarded in the midterms. Meanwhile, back in the real world, the president is setting records again for all the wrong reasons. Biden's approval hitting a record low in a new AP poll. Just 39% of the country thinks he's doing a good job. But record inflation is crushing Americans' wallets and surging gas prices, setting a record for 11 days in a row, and are now projected to go up to $6 this summer. But the Biden administration doesn't want to talk about it.
Do you believe that gas prices are too high?
Completely understand the crunch that so many Americans are under right now. I think that Americans are still recovering from this terrible pandemic, and there are a lot of other world events that are making things difficult for all of us.
So it sounds you're unwilling to say that gas prices are too high.
We're doing all we can.
And if you think they care about lowering the price of gas, Kamala Harris would rather boast about school buses going green.
Think about it. Yellow school buses are our nation's largest form of mass transit. How about that? Every day. So, yes, and let's applaud because it gets them where they need to go. Now, I've spoken to a number of drivers, for example, who have recently switched to electric buses, and they stressed the importance of a quiet engine. It helps the drivers hear the road.
Okay, it's important to hear the road when you're driving a school bus. But you know what? I want to start with you, Katie. When Nancy Pelosi says, I have absolutely no intention of losing the midterms this year, does she know something that we don't?
It's almost like they know they're so screwed that they're just not trying anymore. And they're just going to throw up their hands and say, of course, and be in denial because there's nothing else that they can do to turn the ship around at this point. They're focused on all the wrong issues. Or they want to talk about things that Americans aren't even thinking about at their dinner tables when they're looking at their budgets. And so maybe she knows something that we don't. But the fact that all these Democrats are retiring from Congress, the fact that Republicans have generic ballot numbers that we haven't seen in decades, and Democrats are losing the very demographics, they would say, like Hispanics in Texas, for example, they're leaving the party in droves. So not only are they wrong on the issues, but their party is bleeding voters as well.
You know, it's interesting, Jessica, that Kamala is touting those green school buses. She finally found something to talk about.
That is unkind, Judge.
Is it? I think it's unkind to be the border czar or in charge of the border and not come up with any ideas other than, you know, I haven't been to Europe either.
True. The school buses, I think it's important to have green school buses. I think bus drivers are incredibly important and they keep our kids safe and you don't want them hitting a little kid crossing the street. Obviously, it's not what everyone is talking about at their kitchen tables. They're talking about inflation. They're talking about the cost of food, their wages, all those kinds of things. Nancy Pelosi is the leader of the party in the House. She's not going to come out there and say, you know, we're hoping for 30 lost seats and not 60. That when Republicans lose in a wave, they don't come out there and say that as well. But switching what you're talking about is something obviously people should start doing. And if we look at the results from Tuesday, there were some progressives who did win their seats. But generally speaking, moderate Democrats were the ones who prevailed. And you even saw in Pennsylvania with the biggest kind of upset for the progressive wing against the establishment, John Fetterman had actually pivoted his campaign halfway through to stop talking as much like Bernie Sanders and to talk a little bit more like Connor Lamb. And then lo and behold, he wins every single county in Pennsylvania. Katie mentioned the Hispanic vote. It's not just Texas. This was so jarring out of the AP poll that Biden is less popular amongst Hispanics than any other demographic. So the only two groups where Biden is over water, over the 50% mark in terms of approval, are with black voters at 65% and white college educated women, which I think is about 58%. You cannot win an election with just those two groups. And when you look at the enthusiasm gap, and Karl Rove was on with Jesse last night talking about this, he had his whiteboard, and you could see the differences, the uptick in Republicans coming out, and this happens in the first midterm of a presidency, it's undoubtedly concerning.
Okay. You know, Lawrence, as the gas prices go up, and I understand that the state of Washington is anticipating that gas is going to go up to $10 a gallon. Yeah, that's what they actually said. That, you know, the Democrats refuse to accept any responsibility. You know, and it's not just the energy secretary who says, oh, but that I had a magic wand, but it's this interior secretary that we just heard from, that you just saw. They're happy to not do anything and just kind of say it's Putin's fault when America doesn't believe it's Putin's fault. They could change the numbers if they wanted to.
Yeah. You know, Judge, it's an issue. I was just in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. One lady told me that she's deciding between if she's going to fill up her gas tank or is she going to pay a bill. That's a big problem for voters there.
That's
and
terrible.
It doesn't matter if I'm going to Atlanta or Philly or West Virginia. It's the same story. But the Democrats were in a pickle from the very beginning. If you're going to run for office, you need a great story to tell. Obama's was hope and change. Trump was make America great again, but it was the forgotten men and women. Joe Biden was restore the heart of America. He didn't have to focus on the issues that much because 56% of Americans, according to Gallup, said they were better off under Trump than they would be under Biden. So there wasn't really much that he could say was going bad for the country, but the tone of the country. I mean, when you got Donald Trump that's going in there fixing all this stuff, he came in with a wrecking ball. He didn't create a lot of friends in Washington. Here's going to be the problem for Joe going in the problem. You have the luxury to think about tone when everything is going well financially for you. But when mamas can't get stuff at the store for their babies, when gas prices are going up, when the border is out of control, when people don't feel safe in their communities, I mean, I guess he could run on promises made, promises kept. I mean, he did restore the soul of the country. But what do we get in exchange? We got a hot-ass mess.
Yeah, well, we did. I think, Joe Biden promised that he'd be the adult in the room and he'd bring us together. And I think it was Joe Manchin who said, my frustration is at an all-time high. And he slammed Biden and the Interior Secretary Haaland, H-A-A-L-A-N-D, for doing nothing to alleviate the pain that Americans are going through. It's the inability to empathize that I think the Democrats have a real problem with.
And you know that I am really good at empathy.
You are.
Yes.
The best.
I am a hot ass empathizer, Lawrence. Someone should tell Nancy that you can't preserve political power like it's, you know, with a shot of Botox. It's not a frown line. It's a gas line. She doesn't know what she's doing. These problems are real. They're palpable. They're not some kind of abstract thing that you can deal with wokeism. And it's amazing how many of these problems have developed under Biden that were supposed to develop under Trump, because Trump was inexperienced, right? He was a buffoon, perceived buffoon. And then what happens? Everything that was supposed to happen is now happening under Biden. It's like you were worrying about monkeypox, and then you get hit by a truck, and that truck happens to be Joe Biden. We always hear from addicts like you have to hit rock bottom before you change. So what the hell is the rock bottom right now for Democrats? We're just watching the gas prices go up. We're watching crime still spiral out of control. We're watching high illegal immigration. There's no solutions, right? They're not offering any solutions. So we don't know what the new bottom is. We don't know what the new low is. We could have $20 gas if we don't think about it. The problem with Joe and then I'll stop, is that it's a double-barreled problem. You have an empty vessel, which is Joe, who's in a natural state of decline. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. That's not to be mean. Just observing what we see. But what it has raced to fill that void is wokeism. So you have it's a compounded problem. So you're basically fighting these problems in a hole because Biden wasn't surrounded by moderate voices. He's only been surrounded by wokesters who can't solve any problems. Hence, it's getting worse. And we will. I don't know what the bottom is anymore. I wish I did.
Yeah, I wish we'd get to it so we can start to crawl out of this.
Yes.
But this is a Fox News alert. We have a federal judge's decision on Title 42. A United States judge has just blocked Biden's plan to lift COVID border restrictions for migrants, keeping it in place. The Trump-era policy that let Border Patrol agents deport large groups of migrants quickly over COVID safety concerns. That comes as border apprehensions hitting a new record in April with 234,000 migrant encounters. Okay, you can see it right up there, 234,000. What do you say about this? I'll start with you, Katie.
Well, you know, this is a good thing, according to the Texas DPS and to Border Patrol and to folks down there who are trying to stem the flow, but this isn't going to cut down on the numbers of people as a result. So this is something that was put into place during COVID to keep that issue at bay. But as we know already, the Border Patrol and ICE are already having to release a number of individuals already into the country, depending on where you're from. And also until the asylum rules are changed and you can say something other than I'm afraid to go home, that's what gets you your ticket to any city in the country, really, if you're not a single adult male. The flow will continue. So I think that law enforcement officers will be happy about this decision, but they will say that they still have major challenges because a lot of these numbers that you've seen, most all of the numbers, have been under Title 42, and it hasn't been a total deterrent.
All right. Bill Malusian is live in Eagle Pass, Texas, with the latest from the border.
Do you want, like, elements, or you want me to just, like, react to it?
Hi,
or
Bill.
What?
You're on, Bill.
Hey, guys, we're just getting that breaking news as you are right now, just hearing that the federal judge has blocked the administration's effort to drop this on Monday. Obviously, Border Patrol agents and Texas DPS, this is going to be welcome news to them. But really, all it's going to do is kick the can down the road. Title 42 is going to have to drop at some point in the future, but that's just not going to be on Monday. But even with Title 42 in place, we've still seen an explosion in numbers. We just had well over 230,000 migrant apprehensions this last year in April, the highest in DHS history. We had more than 200,000 the month before. We've had more than 1.3 million illegal crossings since the start of the fiscal year on October 1st. So even with Title 42 in place, we've seen an explosion in numbers. And what this means now is, for certain countries, for certain demographics, the U.S. government will still be able to expel them back to Mexico, meaning that, you know, we've shown this video where once people come across and they are detained by Border Patrol, rather than having to take them into a processing center and do paperwork for hours, they're able to essentially just put them right back onto a bus, drop them off at the port of entry, and expel them back into Mexico. The whole process can take less than an hour. They've used it more than 1.7 million times since March of 2020, that being both the Trump administration and the Biden administration. But I can tell you, frontline border agents, they will be happy to hear this news because I've been texting with them for the past several weeks, ever since news came down that they were planning to get rid of this on May 23rd. And they were basically saying, buckle up, because it's going to be total anarchy and chaos down here at the border. DHS's own projections were saying upwards of 18,000 illegal crossings a day could have happened if Title 42 were to drop. You do the math on that, that's about 540,000 crossings in one single month, more than 500,000. And just to put that in perspective, that would be more than double what we just saw last month in April, which was the highest in U.S. history. So probably a little bit of a sigh of relief for border agents and Texas law enforcement, but not too much because, again, these numbers have been exploding even with Title 42 in place. You don't have well over 200,000 apprehensions at the border month after month without there being a serious surge at the border. And we've been showing the video all day long. We keep getting these massive groups of 150 to 200 crossing every single day. So what does this mean big picture? It means that the administration cannot get rid of Title 42 on Monday as planned. They have to keep enforcing it while this litigation plays out. We'll send it back to you.
Bill, you know, when you say that 1.7 million since 2020 have been sent back because of Title 42, how do they make a decision that someone should be sent back based on Title 42? We weren't even COVID testing these people. So how did they make that decision?
Well, really, it depends what country they're from and what their demographic is. So it really started off with those Northern Triangle countries. It would be Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. At the time, we had agreements with those countries that we would repatriate the migrants back to those countries. We would put them on flights, or we would just kick them back to Mexico. We would do the same thing with Mexicans. Then along the way, you know, once the administrations changed, deals changed with countries in the Northern Triangle. Nicaraguans, for instance, they're, for the most part, just released once they're encountered by Border Patrol, because for the most part, they won't take their citizens back unless they have a passport. Cubans are mass released. We don't enforce Title 42 with them. Venezuelans are released. We don't have a Title 42 agreement with them. And one of the criticisms has been that the Biden administration can just, put them on a bus and send them back to Mexico. But for some of these demographics, they have preferred to put them on an airplane and send them back. You know, they're called repatriation flights.
Right.
And, you know, the Border Patrol Union says if we really want to enforce Title 42 across the board, just kick everybody back to Mexico. The administration hasn't done that. They've preferred to try to fly some people back.
Right.
And when those host countries don't cooperate, they can't do it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill Malusian. You know, the question that I'm getting at, Lawrence, is the fact that the decision to send people back to the original country has nothing to do with 42. They're saying 42, but if Nicaragua won't take them back, then what does it matter, Title 42 or not? So it seems that 42 is being used in some cases, but not others.
Well, I would say this, just based on the reporting I've done at the border, 42 has been used as a Band-Aid. It's not going to fix the mass problem that's at
right.
the border. On another note, and the judge did the Biden administration a favor here,
exactly.
right here. But number two, as a result of the judge making this decision, a lot of women and children are going to be placed in danger coming across the border, because a lot of the folks keep asking, well, why are they bringing the children across the border? Because it's a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know that they can get across, and that this is why you don't see a lot of people running away at the border. Most of the runners that you see at the border are single adult males, because they realize that they can't come into the country under Title 42. So this is going to put our Border Patrol agents yet again in a bad position. But again, it's going to put these kids and these women in a bad position as well. Joe Biden needs to understand this. This is going to be a terrible issue for those Democrats that are on the border area. They are Democrats at heart. But what they're saying is they cannot do this. They understand their voters are putting a lot of pressure on them because of this issue. And I'll just note this, because I know Justin's going to hop in on this. These are Latinos, too, as well. There are 50%, over 50% of the Border Patrol agents are minority. When you look at the Texas DPS that are doing a lot of the patrol, they are minority.
Absolutely.
When you look at those districts that are at the border, they are minority. This is not a matter of if you hate the people and you want them to get a better life. This is about law and order and the strain of resources in those areas.
You know, Jessica, the point that Lawrence makes is a good one. How is this going to impact those Democrats who are working along the border who are running for office?
Well, I think it's a boon on the immigration issue for Democrats at this particular moment, because it gives us a few more months to listen to Democrats like Ruben Gallego, who most likely is going to challenge Kyrsten Sinema for her seat in 2024 in Arizona. And it feels like a ripe time to put together some sort of commission, like get Will Hurd. I don't know what he's doing now that he retired from Congress. He's a Republican, and like a Gallego or someone else on the border, together for a bipartisan plan to do this. Because Title 42, it was a Band-Aid, and we had a very thoughtful conversation on the show yesterday about this issue, where it was acknowledged that this is a health policy. Title 42 came into
exactly.
being because of COVID. We're moving towards a world where hopefully COVID is not something that should be running our immigration policy. What is the next step? So hopefully now we have a few months, we have the summer, where there's going to be very high numbers of crossings to deal with that, and we can go into November with a clear plan.
Okay. Wrap it up for us.
Well, it is a testament to how appealing our systemically racist country is that millions of non-whites want to come here. But as long as we care about immigration, it's like crime and it's like inflation. The White House won't, because in their view, we only view these concerns because we're deplorables embracing, you know, replacement theory. When it's all it is, and all of these things, whether it is crime or whether it's inflation or immigration, it's about process. It's about rules. It's not about people. We're a big Republicans and conservatives and libertarians. We're all about systems. We just want you to be part of the system and do it the right way. And so what's happening now, you see a lot of people painting a broad brush of this racism stuff. And this is their way of doing it here, like they did with crime and elsewhere.
Go ahead, Katie.
On the bigger issue of the systems, Bill reported earlier today that there was an American citizen who was arrested in Texas for helping to smuggle illegal immigrants across the border. Bigger picture, the longer this lawlessness goes on and the systems are disrespected and Border Patrol's mission is to process people, not to enforce the border and protect the country, that corruption will breed and it will get completely out of control and it will reach public officials, it will reach law enforcement. So there's a longer term consequence to allowing this type of lawlessness to continue that, and once it's in those systems, we start looking a lot like the Mexican corruption. And that's a lot of the reason why this is happening as well. And once you get to that point, it's really difficult to go back.
And the sad part about it is that with the administration flying people into the interior of the United States, that corruption is going to spread quicker than we can imagine. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to keep an eye on this breaking news, a federal judge blocking President Biden's plan to end Title 42. More of the Five is next.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Black Lives Matter getting called out for living large while the people they claimed to be helping were being killed in the streets. The group using $90 million in donation money to purchase lavish mansions and enrich the friends and family of their co-founder. But that wealth didn't translate to saving the lives of Black Americans. Instead, they bore the brunt of the surge in murders following the George Floyd riots of 2020. Take a look at this chart from the Manhattan Institute, the red line showing how the increase in violence disproportionately affected Black victims. But of course, BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors, says she's the victim in all of this.
Much of the funding that came in was from individual donors. That was a lot of white guilt money. Some of my mistakes are being weaponized against me and also the entire movement. And that's truly disappointing to see us fall into that as well.
Lawrence, you're laughing at this one.
Because it's such a joke. And everybody, they all got play, and I'm enjoying every bit of this. There were two. There was the woke tax, and then there was the white guilt tax. The woke tax was for the corporations. I mean, they didn't believe in any of this stuff. I mean, you look at the corporations, they're not as woke as they pretend to be. But they had to pay Black Lives Matter in order to not be boycotted or their buildings to be there. That was their protection. You got to pay the king his tax. As for the individual donors, they must not have any Black friends. I mean, because Black people weren't supporting the organization Black Lives Matter. Black folks on the street were saying equal justice under the law. That's it. They never said support this organization. Many of the values that the organization represent are totally against how I was raised and most Black people were raised in our community. So we never supported organizations. We always thought the organization was a joke. We also didn't support the funding the police. If you look at Pew Research, there are more white people that support defunding the police than actual Black people. So the question is, who are these people listening to? Not Black people!
Yeah, well, there were a lot of civil rights leaders, too, from the 60s who came out against Black Lives Matter early. And, of course, their voices were not amplified by the media. Greg, I wanted to get your response to white guilt money. And white liberals sending all of this money to BLM, thinking they were doing something good and putting a yard sign up. And
she's right. It is white guilt money. It's also like I'm thinking about it was all whenever I remember the BLM protests. angry college chicks. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go to the suburbs and you'd see the list signs. To yes. the list signs.
Yes. Yes.
They're just like, and it's just like, what this all this is like a massive delusional virtue signal. If I do this, I'm a really good person. And it's almost as though BLM didn't exist for blacks, as you say. It existed for the white liberal to feel good about themselves. All those corporations had those earnest wokesters and human resources back in BLM. That, you know, we don't just make candy bars. We encourage social change, and you go home and you don't really care. None of the stuff that these activists supporters did helped anybody except in terms of statistics, criminality. I mean, it's kind of sad, but BLM hurt more blacks than it helped.
Yeah.
When you look at those numbers, it's stunning.
Judge, what about the extortion that BLM was engaged in, you know, demanding that corporations and individuals give money or, you know, the riots and violence is going to continue? I mean, that's what happened.
Well, here's the question. Do the corporations that gave the money consider themselves extorted? I mean, did they do it for virtue signaling, as Greg just talked about, or did they do it because they felt they didn't want to be boycotted? Or, you know, it's like the mob coming in and saying, you know, you want protection money, give us the money. But, you know, what's most interesting about this is that the nation's political culture has played a role in the crime that occurred during the pandemic and right after George Floyd's murder, because we know that in Democrat-leaning cities, more African-Americans were killed or victims of murder than they were in white-leaning, you know, Republican cities. So at the same time that crime is going up in the black communities, you've got this Patrice Cullors, who's no better than a two-bit scammer that I prosecuted for years, who's out there saying, I want to take money for Black Lives Matter. You know, you people, whether she wants to call it white guilt doesn't matter. She used it to enrich herself, her baby daddy, her brother. She gave more than five times the money for the Trayvon Martin Foundation to her baby daddy. Okay, and I think that these people have to be prosecuted. Forget about the corporations. You know what? They got suckered. They get suckered all the time, and I'm disgusted with them. But that's not the big issue. The big issue is that this woman is now complaining that it's being weaponized against her. You know what? Let me show you the penal code. That's being weaponized. When they bring the justice system against you for the scamming, the way they just did to an activist BLM leader in Boston who faces fraud charges for laundering 2020 donations for personally enriching themselves. This is where we need the hand of justice to come in and start prosecuting these people. It's not your piggy bank. Yeah. And how dare you cause division because you just want to make money for yourself.
So, Jessica, my colleague Julio Rosas, who covered these riots extensively, wrote a book about what happened. And in the book, what's interesting is he talks about how the damage is not temporary. So when the cameras leave and the rioters leave, these communities, these black communities, have been devastated for decades, and there's no one there. There's no economic influence to go in as a result of the damage that's been done. And so the question is, how did the same people who donated all this money to BLM, the white guilt money, now make up for the fact that they were supporting a movement that has destroyed entire communities for at least a generation?
In defense of white guilt, give me a second here. I don't think
and baby daddies.
And baby daddies getting
that's
their
a better
due.
Name for than pregnant man is baby daddy.
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
More on the white guilt.
It isn't fair to me to tarnish a group of people who were genuinely horrified by what they saw. And this was across the board, right? Everyone unilaterally thought what happened to George Floyd.
Everyone.
And that they did what they thought was right, which was there was a prominent organization that was saying that they
prominent
were
prominent among two.
Well,
white people.
No, but
they weren't prominent.
Do you think if you are just an average person who's trying to put food on the table and you saw the footage, the 8 3/4 minutes of what happened to George Floyd, and you see someone on the television who's saying, I run an organization that is trying to fix this problem. There's systemic racism in this country and criminal justice reform issues need to be pushed forward. And if you donate to me, I will help. That it's their fault for not doing the research on who Patrice Cullors actually is.
Yeah,
it's not.
It is such the typical white liberal response. If we just throw money on it, if we
you
go.
Everything and can't instead be instead white liberals' fault. It's well, just not possible that everything is.
A lot of the stuff impacting black America and all the policies that you guys have implemented in our community are white liberals' responsibility.
I am not.
Because we don't endorse them in our community. All I'm saying, it was lazy. It was petty.
Jessica,
I was at those rallies when it was all white people there, and when black people told them, they told them to stop burning our places, and they continue to do it and weaponize the police against us. I was there, every single one of them, and they did and continue to divide the country. So again, it's their fault again, suckered.
I'm the first person to say that. You know, the fact that Latinx even exists as a term is a white person's problem. I mean, Latinos do not like that term. It's a similar thing that black people were not supporting BLM, but they were supporting the movement. And I think that it's just unfair to say that cities and communities and these small mom and pop shops have been decimated just because of that. We have an education problem. We have a media problem that people are not publicizing these stories necessarily from the beginning to say this is who those people are. And also that people weren't thinking widely enough, because what the Black Lives Matter movement was actually about was systemic racism in all corners of the country. So people could donate to organizations, free speech organizations, organizations.
No, it wasn't about systemic racism in all corners of the country. Because if you said white lives matter, you got canceled.
Because
Don't talk to me about across the board systemic.
All right. The reason that white lives matter or all lives matter or blue lives matter was a
problem. First of all, whoever heard of them, this is not an organization just in defense of Lawrence that was around for 10 years at the charity
I've been writing about Black Lives Matter since 2014 and exactly who they are. And
I've been called a
racist a lot, and now we know the truth about them. So fastest is steps next. If I was a cowboy, I'd be wild and free, rolling around
these towns like tumbleweeds. You know how it goes. One time for my L.A. sisters, one time for my L.A., L.A.
Ladies, you can't tell the difference. One time for it's some hip-hop, Greg. Welcome back. Time for the fastest. All right, so first up, liberal NPR reportedly has a system where people can secretly snitch on coworkers who aren't complying with their draconian mask-wearing policy. The company actually encourages others to correct their coworkers or rat them out to the higher-ups, and repeat offenders could be fired. Greg, what do you think about this?
Well, the left always has an obsession with power and authority, even though they condemn the right for the very same thing. But, I mean, you want to talk about draconian? I mean, you think NPR is bad? There's a company that sends employees home for 5 days, even if they don't have COVID, and they'll make you wear a mask for 10 days, even if you test negative for COVID. And these rules are purely arbitrary, but the employees have to do it. It's like a new lockdown. We're all either sent. Oh, wait, it's our company.
Yes,
we are actually held captive by some anonymous legal executive that is like terrified of some, like, I don't know, is it New York? We have to stop this. We cannot be crapping on NPR or anybody else if we are equally as draconian. We are sending people home who are healthy. People are home who are testing negative because somebody else tested positive. What? Nobody even has symptoms. This is madness, and it has to stop.
Yeah, but I went home this week because I was sick, but I didn't have COVID.
Oh, you know,
what does that
you.
Mean?
We missed you.
You did not miss me. You weren't even here.
I sent you flowers.
You weren't even here. You didn't.
I still need my job. So, Katie, it's on you.
I don't care. I'd rather be sent home over talking the truth than a negative COVID test.
Katie?
I agree.
Listen, didn't you watch? You could be a carrier.
I am a carrier of many things.
I guess we should just move on to the next.
I think Greg said everything.
Approved senior prank at Texas high school going haywire and causing thousands of dollars in damage and forcing the school to cancel classes for the remainder of the year. Video shows white fog from fire extinguishers filling a vandalized cafeteria. The students responsible apparently are going to have to pay for the mess they created and may face criminal charges. Jessica, did you do this in high school?
I did not, but we had one of those senior pranks, and Chevy Chase went to my high school and he walked a cow up to the roof because, you know, they can't go backwards.
That's good.
I love that.
This is totally real and very Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Katie, what happened to just skipping school?
Hey, I love this story because I helped plan my senior prank and it was flawless. And we had a whole game plan and whiteboards and maps and radios. And we had outfits. We looked like ninjas. The key is you don't cause damage. Like, right. You do something very annoying, but you don't vandalize anything. Mm. So we filled 10,000 Dixie cups up with a little bit of water and filled the whole school. So they had to start school late. And then we zip-tied all the doors together.
So these were amateurs.
They're amateurs. They're not as organized as I was. Pulled it off. Didn't get caught.
Maybe. Greg, do you have some?
Well, our senior prank was literally we pranked seniors, like senior citizens.
We'd break into their homes
and we'd move everything around so they'd wake up in the morning and they'd walk into furniture. It was a terrible thing. I think this is bad. I think that the school janitor gets to go to each student's house to do the same thing to their bedroom with a fire extinguisher because the janitor is going to have to deal with this stuff. So they should do the same thing to the students' houses, bedrooms, or maybe the whole house. That would be fun.
Judge.
I skipped my senior year of high school.
Why?
Too smart for that
scandal.
I was done.
You were done with it. You just left.
I went to college after junior year.
I'm not mad at you.
Did you go away and then return with a child? Remember that? They used to do that.
They did.
It's my time.
This year's my time. Okay.
And finally, age is just a number, right? Nearly half of Americans don't feel like they're an adult until they reach the age of 30. I'm 29, so I am not adult yet.
Oh.
Jessica?
Age shamer.
I stayed in school for a very long time, so I agree with this. I didn't think that big responsibility started until 30 plus.
Judge?
I think especially today. I don't think kids mature until they're 30 today.
Katie, my bills say otherwise.
Yeah, I would say definitely feel like an adult, but also still figuring out. Like, the survey, I'm curious how old the people were who took the survey. Because I feel like at every stage of life, you're like, am I doing this the right way? I don't know.
Yeah.
Am I screwing up? Am I doing a good job?
And what about a senior citizen like you, Greg?
You know, I'll tell you one thing, and that's disgusting you would say that. We're going to HR. You're coming with me.
You're
already on your way,
brother. No. Here's the thing. This self-selects for weird people. Who fills out a survey from a mattress company? It's somebody with a lot of free time.
They pay you.
Do they? How do you know
How
that?
Do you know
I
that?
Work in polling.
You did it.
Oh, yeah.
You work in polling? Can I get paid
Have
for something?
Have we met before?
I didn't know you work in polling.
All right, we got to go.
Okay.
Fan Mail Friday's up next.
The great thing about Fridays is none of the executives really watch this show.
Lucky
think
you.
I'm okay.
For 12 more minutes.
For 12, yes. The first question from Janet O. Oops, stopped. What old person things do you do? First, this assumes that old people do specifically old things, which I resent, Jessica. But what old person things do you do?
I don't want to offend anyone. Yeah. But these are two weird things or things that I think
older people do.
Like, I save food in the refrigerator forever.
My mom would do that.
Yeah. And just keep going through it. Like, I love, like, cold Chinese food.
Yes.
And we'll just eat, like, a dumpling a day. And my husband's like, you got to stop doing
that. A dumpling a day. Sounds like a children's book.
It's not disgusting. Anyway.
A dumpling a day.
That was good enough. I'm not going with the second one.
Lawrence?
I need to eat or I get very angry.
Oh, cranky. I'm a cranky. Yes. Yeah, very cranky.
Oh, cranky. Yes.
Cranky. I was old very when I was cranky. Born.
Yeah.
You know,
same.
Cranky. And I make a mess everywhere. That's what a lot of
old people
do, Katie.
Puzzles.
Oh.
Right? That's good for your brain.
I feel like that's also hipster.
Printing.
Puzzles.
Well, maybe. Printing things out.
Oh, yeah, that's. I don't have a printer.
Reading real books.
Yeah.
Buying real books.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I just think that's normal behavior, though.
Judge, what about you?
Well, I do two things that are kind of schizophrenic. I like, stop laughing, Lawrence.
Just two?
Yeah. One is I save paper towels. I hate when people waste paper towels having nothing
That's
to do
so
with
funny.
The pandemic. Okay? But I'm talking, okay? And the second thing I do that old people do is you figure you don't have much time left, so you go out and buy jewelry.
You know, I say, like, all the stuff I get from delivery, I have a big thing of, like, napkins and plastic forks.
I do that.
There's, and like, a nuclear war is coming.
It is.
It is coming.
It is coming. Not a nuclear war.
Also, you know what I do with that? All the old people used to do in my neighborhood?
What?
I pay people to do chores.
Oh.
Like, you know, like, I can't.
Why is that an old person thing?
Because you're not doing it yourself.
That's got nothing to do with old, honey. I was doing that when I was in my 20s.
What are you talking about? Nothing. We're going to move on. This is from Fred. What's the earliest news story from your childhood that impacted you? All right, Katie. And don't say...
The Bill Clinton scandal?
Yes. Yeah. That's good. Mm. That infected a lot lot of people. It affected and infected. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
The Clinton scandal. Also, I remember the first invasion of Iraq.
You were young.
I was.
You were young. How about you, Lawrence?
9/11.
9/11, yeah. How old were you?
Third grade.
Third grade, okay.
Third grade, yeah.
Wow. I was only
What did she
five.
Say?
Nothing. What did she say? Yeah. Thank you for the help, Judge. I didn't know she was here.
You were looking at me. I wanted you to get Jesse.
Yes.
Right.
I was afraid you were going to get violent if I went to Jessica first.
I was going to say the Clinton election, and then obviously the scandal was a big one. But that was the first like political story I was aware of was the election.
Let's see if Judge picks the same one I pick.
I remember being in grammar school, and I think that Kennedy was shot.
Oh, that's a good
Yeah.
I was like. Yeah.
Yeah, that's see, I went with Watergate.
I was in law school during Watergate.
Really?
Yeah.
I was at the Watergate Hotel.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you meet
G. Gordon
people
Liddy's
there?
Backpack. Yeah, I actually put on a play. I put on a little puppet show based on Watergate in second grade summer school. Pretty weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was a dork.
Who was the protagonist?
Spiro Agnew. One More Thing is up next. I'm dead.
It's time now for One More Thing, and I go first. Now, there's a... Okay, stop, Greg. Stop. All right, at St. Jude, this is serious stuff. A St. Jude patient draws a monster truck, and he gets surprised with a real-life full-size version featuring his artwork. There's the real monster truck. His name is Calvin. He is a cancer patient when he drew his own version of Monster Jam toy truck. But what's significant about this, folks, is he added emojis to reflect his feelings throughout his 18 months of chemo and radiation. He was surprised when his toy truck became a reality with a life-size version from Monster Jam, emojis included. Calvin, you are so strong, and we are so proud of you. Keep on drawing and keep on fighting. God bless him.
And you didn't even say keep on trucking.
Okay, that's enough. Greg, you're next.
Yeah. I love that. I saw that earlier on Fox and Friends.
You did?
Yeah. Anyway.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I've seen all yours early, too.
So tonight, great show. We've got Tom Shalhoub, Katie Pavlich, Adam Yenser, Kat Timpf. And then tomorrow I'll be in Salt Lake City. There might be some tickets left at the Eccles Theater. And I'll be with Tom Shalhoub. And also Tyrus is going to be doing a Q&A. It's going to be hilarious. Let's do this. Greg Scaredy Cat News with Riboflavin. All right. Here's a cat that is literally scared of his own shadow. Take a look at this. See his shadow? Look. That's amazing. Look, yeah. See the shadow move? Isn't that great? It's like shocked by your own shadow. You know, this is exactly how Brad Kilby gets to work. Just shocks himself to work. All right, I could watch that for
like a chicken.
You know, everything looks like chicken to you.
Whatever tastes like chicken, too.
All right, Jessica, you're next.
Okay, so big news for equality. FIFA has just appointed three female referees for the World Cup for the first time in competition. Greg, I see you bobbing your head like this doesn't matter. It does matter. So three women referees and three women assistant referees will be in Qatar for the first time in competition history there. The chairman of the FIFA referees committee said of the decision, they deserve to be at the FIFA World Cup because they constantly perform at a really high level.
This is soccer.
Yep.
All right.
Everyone, FIFA.
Keep going, Jessica.
I'm sorry. Anyway.
No, Jessica, I think that was very important because that's really a big deal.
It is ignore a huge deal, especially in Qatar.
Shoot
me.
Qatar.
Right. I'm not going to shoot. Wait, I want to plug something. I never plug. I'm on Fox News Sunday. You should watch.
Oh.
Thank you.
See that? I applaud.
Bravo. Okay, Lawrence, hit it.
And you better not interrupt. Everybody wants their wedding to be remembered, but a pair of stunt performers took it to the next level when they literally lit themselves on fire before walking down the aisle.
Wow.
Amber Michelle and her husband Gabe intentionally set themselves ablaze and walked in front of a cheering friends and family before the fires were put out by a fire extinguisher. Both Amber and Gabe are professional stunt performers and do not try this
why
at
did
home.
They, okay, Lawrence.
I'd say try it at home.
Why did they do that?
They're just crazy. They're stunt performers. They're crazy.
Oh, they're stunt performers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All right. My show
Flamers.
Is tomorrow at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Don't miss it. I'm also hosting Fox and Friends tomorrow morning.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh,
look at you.
All right, Katie, hit it.
Okay, if you've seen the movie Jaws, you know about the scene.
You made me do it.
All right, so that little kid is in the water with his actual brother, Jonathan Searle. Now, 47 years later, he is the police chief in the town where Jaws was filmed, Oak Bluffs. And so pretty cool that he was in the movie, and now he is the police chief of
the town.
That's
really cool.
That is. It's very cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah, I think it is great, but nobody asked you. That's it for us. Have a great weekend. We love you.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to The Five ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.